Coming up on today's Family.ie radio magazine, knowing your adversary is one of the first steps in getting victory. Today, we're going to look a bit more in depth at a few of the characters involved in what Paul Coughlan calls the theatre of bullying, why bullying takes place, who is a likely target of bullying, and how bystanders can change things for better or for worse. We'll hear more about that in a moment. And the fallout from sexual promiscuity is widespread, but by and large, it isn't really being talked about. I think some people may get the impression that everyone is doing it, so any chances of curbing the behaviour is long gone.
It begins from a very early age about respecting themselves, respecting their body.
And in our third segment today...
Just because you live on the cheap, it doesn't mean that you have a proper budget.
I think it's safe to say that the word budget tends to stir up all sorts of thoughts in people's minds, and they're not always happy thoughts. Today, we're going to look at how to set up a realistic budget. That's all ahead on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of Family.ie. I'm Ronan Johnston. So, let's say a young person is being bullied. Sometimes the advice they're given is not so helpful. And hopefully we wouldn't actually apply that same advice to everyday life as adults. But then again, if we did... It might sound something like this.
Hello, what's your emergency?
Hi, I rang you last week about your man, the guy who robbed my house.
Ah, sure, I remember you, so. How's it going?
Well, not good. He's threatened to do it again.
Oh, right. Well, that's grand, so. Thanks for ringing.
Wait.
Sorry?
Can't you help me?
Help you with what? I mean, sure, he's just threatened. He didn't actually do anything, did he?
Well, I mean, he robbed me last week. Pretty sure he'll do it again.
Well, come on now. I mean, it's really your word against his, isn't it? You go on now. Bye.
Thanks again to Parables Productions for helping us get started. Today, we're going to look a bit more in depth at a few of the characters involved in what Paul Coughlan calls the theatre of bullying.
Yeah, this really helps people get their mind around what is often a very perplexing issue. Imagine, if you will, if you went to a play and you found that the actors just decided not to play their supporting roles. Well, it would be over. The curtain would go down and the audience would not get the show that they thought they were getting. In many ways, that's what we want in bullying, because the bully wants a public display of pain and anguish over the target. And if we can take that away from the bully's not going to get what they want and they're just going to move on.
So let's look more at why bullying takes place, who is a likely target of bullying, and how bystanders can change things for better or for worse. We'll hear more from Paul via Skype throughout the series, as he's the founder of an organisation called The Protectors. Also joining us again is the founder and director of the Anti-Bullying Centre at Trinity College Dublin, Professor Mona O'Moore. Eileen Jeffers and Joy Cantwell-Moore are the founders of Equip Ministry Ireland. To begin with, what does the research tell us about the motivation of bullying?
Very often what we've discovered through the YMCA is that the young people have no sense of empathy. They've no sense of what does it feel like to be bullied. And once they just even initiate that discussion, it's extremely powerful and it's amazing. And once they see that, then they're on board. Now, I don't know what that's about. Is it the age they're at that they haven't connected in with that empathy yet? Or is it just that they don't think about it?
Again, they are playing around with this power. And though they're conscious of what they're doing, they're not conscious of the product or the outcome. They've enjoyed messing around with another person, with controlling them and dominating them. But they really did not know how deep it went. So they are reachable. You can sit down and speak with them. What we recommend is that you have the conversation before the conversation, and that is you don't have the target present. You explain to this what we call the acute bully what they are doing, and then you just look for their response. And if their response is cold-hearted, if it's glib, if they blame the target, well, then you're not dealing with an acute bully. You're dealing with someone who's probably a chronic bully and who really enjoys it and doesn't want to change.
The pure bullies are those who are the predators as well. So they're very sort of instrumental in how they go about it. They, of course, are compensating for their own feelings of, you know, inferiority, insecurities, inadequacies. They know them better than everybody else. They're cognitively quite smart. They are lacking in empathy because they know, I mean, they have cognitive sort of empathy, but they don't have emotional empathy.
Yes.
So they know what hurts, but they don't care. Yeah. That it hurts.
Studies show that most do not have low self-esteem. We have this belief that bullies have low self-esteem. In reality, they have average to excessive self-esteem. Bullies bully not due to anger, but usually due to disdain and contempt toward other people. And disdain and contempt are both the language and the behavior of superiority. Your average bully believes they're superior to other people. And then this helps put it in perspective, doesn't it? Because those of us that don't bully, we just can't believe another person would do that to another person. Well, if you believe you're more important and you're more valuable than other people, then basically almost anything becomes possible. And the dictators of history have proven this over and over.
And the bully victim shares some of that, but he also shares some of the traits of the victim. It's kind of an interesting group. Mm-hmm. And they need much more psychological intervention, whereas the pure bully just needs to be told, look, this isn't acceptable and there are consequences.
Yes.
And they need to be engaged more in course in terms of learning a bit about empathy, but equally to then be able to control their anger. But you are not getting away with this, you know, that the cost should be greater than the payoff. But at the moment we have it that the payoff is greater than the cost.
Yeah.
And so I say that bullies are children who bully are doing so because they can.
We don't want to write off all bullies of being of the criminal mind. But there are those who are. And you will know it by their behavior. You will know it by just observing their facial expression when they are confronted. You'll know it most particularly by their future behavior. You know, Abraham Lincoln had the great line where he said, the great thing about the future is that it comes one day at a time. The great thing about a bully is that they will reveal who they are over time. You just need to be watching and you just need the right information. They will show you who they are if you have the courage and the wisdom and the foresight to see them.
And yes, knowing your adversary is one of the first steps in getting victory. Do keep in mind that our text comment line is 086-251-6886. And if you have any questions or comments at any time for which you need a reply, feel free to email us at radio@family.ie. Again, that's 086-251-6886 or radio@family.ie. We need to take a quick break right now, but coming up next...
Our generation would certainly be aware of, you know, the mammy saying, you know, if you come home pregnant, you're out the door. And certainly in a moment of passion, you know, that's not going to cross your mind. I do think that just saying to somebody, don't do it, is not enough.
So keep it tuned right here for more on today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to our Family.ie Radio Magazine. We turn now to another article. Just a word of warning, we will be covering some mature topics today, so if you have much younger listeners around you, you may want to make sure that they're out of earshot. Today, we look at value versus cost when it comes to sexual activity for young women. In a few moments, we'll be joined once again by prison chaplain Claire Hargaden, independent hospital and healthcare professional Jennifer Leach, and counsellor Linda Wagner. To start us off today, our director Stephen Cardy is joined by our own Anne-Marie Miles and our guest contributor for the entire series, youth worker and qualified life coach, Mark Fennell. So, Anne-Marie, the fallout from sexual promiscuity is widespread, but by and large, it isn't really being talked about. I think some people may get the impression that everyone is doing it, so any chances of curbing the behaviour is long gone.
The whole concept of purity and chastity is not very popular in Ireland. It's, you know, the sense is it's a bit last season. It's a bit, you know, that's what the old church used to say we were to do. And, you know, we've seen that there doesn't seem to be a reason anymore for girls to say no. And, you know, part of what we're trying to do in these programs is to equip parents and young girls themselves into having a reason to say no. And I think a lot of young girls out there who are doing whatever they want to do believe that they are owning it. And really, the only way to truly own it is to be in the driver's seat of your own behavior and in the driver's seat of your own sexual activity and your opinion of yourself and the opinion that God has of you and the opinion that your family and your parents have kind of instilled into you. That's really where, you know, we would hope that young girls would drive their actions, their behaviour from that.
That's not just a noble aspiration, although it is noble, but it also has good science and good health reasons behind it as well, because it preserves you emotionally, psychologically and so on. Because as we looked in the previous programmes, girls are looking for something that guys are not willing to give them because they're not geared that way. And therefore, why engage in behaviour which your parents would say you should abstain from? Because intuitively they know that that's not in your best interest. But in fact, we know that girls are not going to be satisfied if they give themselves away cheaply.
It's very true, because I think as well in Ireland, you know, particularly, we've come from a point of view of, well, you know, the church says don't do it, and out of a sense of religion, as it were, the do's and don'ts, we adhere to it. But really, it's not a case of out of religion we should not do certain things, but it should be out of, well, look, it's actually for my own best interest, number one. And number two, the emotional fallout from doing such things can be so large, it can affect me later on in life. You know, please God, it doesn't affect everybody that way, but it does affect a lot of people that way. And that is the thing you don't know until you go, or even until it's too late.
Within a marriage, as a marriage was maybe envisioned to be, you know, because we do all have ideas about marriage, that it should be loving and safe and committed and whatever, that context, a monogamous relationship where your partner puts you first, cares for you and sacrifices for you, that is the most safe context for a woman to have sex. Because they're, you know, all going well, there's a loving partner there to protect you. And when I say protect you, I'm not talking about hunter, caveman hunter protection. I'm talking about protection of your heart, your mind, you know, a person who's very safe. And I think it's one of the reasons that unfaithfulness hurts so much when someone is in a relationship and another partner has a sexual relationship with someone outside of your relationship. It's such a betrayal, because you've really laid your whole self bare for that person. And I think that does reveal how important sexuality is to us.
There's something happening inside that the person is seeing. They want something different. But I think someone has to give them hope that there is something different, that if we don't speak of something different, then they don't know there is anything. Because it's all they know, and it's all that's around them.
The author of the book that we've been looking at, Girls Uncovered, says that part of the reason that he believes that girls are so sexually active is that parents, or culture even, are not giving them a reason to say no to the sexual advances and the sexual invitations of young men.
I think he could be right. I mean, our generation would certainly be aware of, you know, the mammy saying, you know, if you come home pregnant, you're out the door. Mm. And certainly in a moment of passion, you know, that's not going to cross your mind. Yeah. I do think that just saying to somebody, don't do it, is not enough. Each individual needs to own it for themselves, really own it, and understand why they're not saying no. It's not good enough that it's because when my parents have told me to say no, or my church has told me to say no, or because everybody else around them is saying yes, that it is something they have to understand. And you know what? It begins from a very early age about respecting themselves, respecting their body, respecting what they believe in, respecting, you know, if they're coming from a Christian background, respecting the word of God, allowing the word of God to live in them and breathe in them. Yeah. Because I know I never had sex before marriage because I was too afraid, and I really was fearful, but I never owned it. Mm-hmm. I could never have sat down and debated with somebody why I believe it's wrong. Mm-hmm. I didn't go down that route because of fear. Mm-hmm. And I certainly wouldn't want my child not to be involved in sex because of fear. I would want them to really understand why sex before marriage is not good, because of their own relationship with God and what God is speaking to them about, so that they own it. Likewise, I wouldn't like my child to say, well, you know, they're a Christian because, well, my parents are.
Yeah.
That they would have to own their relationship with God. Mm. So likewise, I would like both of my daughters, to really own and take responsibility for their sexual activity in light of their relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, some people would say that quote-unquote sexual freedom for girls is empowerment, but wouldn't it make sense that for them to withhold it is actually more empowering? If you've missed any of our series so far, or you'd like to hear them again, you can find them at family.ie. Either listen to them online or download them for later, free of charge, at www.family.ie, and I'll give you that information again a bit later on. This is family.ie radio magazine. I think it's safe to say that the word budget tends to stir up all sorts of thoughts in people's minds. We need to take a quick break right now, but coming up next, we're going to look at how to set up a realistic budget.
People think you have to have all sorts of qualifications and be able to do all sorts of calculations to do a budget, and that's not the case at all. My advice to people is to do something very, very simple.
I have no problem setting up a budget. I think it's a very good idea. The problem is sticking to it.
I still think that we, and as Irish people, and possibly myself, were a bit confused about what a budget is. I'm excited to hear. Just because you live on the cheap, it doesn't mean that you have a proper budget. So I'm excited to hear, what is a proper budget?
Well, I think the first thing they have to do, Stephen, is they have to acknowledge that they are running into difficulties. Yeah. Some people just spend and spend, and it's kind of a bit of an Irish attitude.
Stay tuned for the final segment of today's edition of Family.ie Radio Magazine. Welcome once again to today's edition of Family.ie. What do you think of when you hear the word budget?
I make a mental budget. I write some of it down and some of it goes in my memory.
It's kind of very hard to do. It's what I do that all the time. I always live the cheapest ways and just live simply. So I suppose that's budgeting in itself.
Everyone has to budget. You have to budget what money you have. If you're spending more than you're earning, it's a disaster.
When I hear the word budget, I don't really think about a financial budget. I think about the government and how they've been cutting everything.
I think it's safe to say that the word budget tends to stir up all sorts of thoughts in people's minds, and they're not always happy thoughts. Today, we're going to look at how to set up a realistic budget. To begin the conversation, here's Joy Cantwell-Moore, Ger Shanahan and Stephen Cardy.
I think when asked the question, Irish people might think the need to make a budget is a bit scary, and why should I do that? Because we were able to make ends meet. But as we'll hear in this programme and in subsequent programmes, the value of setting out your stall and thinking about the future and living within your means is really profound in terms of the life you live and not getting yourself into distress, as has happened to so many, unfortunately.
I have no problem setting up a budget. I think it's a very good idea. The problem is sticking to it.
I still think that we, and as Irish people, and possibly myself, were a bit confused about what a budget is. I'm excited to hear, because it's interesting on listening to one of the girls there who spoke. She's saying, sure, yeah, well, I live on a budget. I am on a budget. But just because you live on the cheap, it doesn't mean that you have a proper budget. So I'm excited to hear, what is a proper budget?
I'm here with Dr. Philip O'Regan. Philip, would you introduce yourself?
I'm the Dean of the Chemie Business School at the University of Limerick. So I have responsibility for about somewhere between 2,800 and 3,000 students and about 100 employees. So it's a fairly big operation. And then as well as that, I'm an accountant. So I would have a lot of experience in dealing with people on financial matters in terms of both consultancy, advising them on budgets, explaining to students and individuals as well how to operate and manage their money. So right across the range of activities and experiences in that space.
And how long have you been in that role, Philip?
I've been dean for the last 2 years, and prior to that I was over 20 years in the college. So I'm in the university for nearly 23 years.
Right.
All of that teaching accounting or financial analysis, which is my main area. So understanding numbers, Stephen, and how they relate to people's lives would be my main activity.
People might be a little bit afraid of budgeting. You know, they might be sort of saying to themselves, I don't want to be put a sort of a chain around my neck, or I don't want to be constrained. I want to do what I like or what I want.
I know.
You know, and the budget is a sort of, I don't want that.
It is, and I understand that. And people think you have to have all sorts of qualifications and be able to do all sorts of calculations to do a budget. And that's not the case at all. My advice to people is to do something very, very simple. Just to summarise your income for a period, so whether it's for a week or a month or a year. And under that, list the expenses that you typically have in the same period. So it's a very simple exercise. It's money in and it's money out. Mm. And you're tracking these numbers so that you can control, in particular, your expenses. So I put most people to spend most of their time listing the types of expenses that they have, making sure they're aware of the full range of things that they spend. Most people do not know how much money they spend.
Mm.
And if they can summarize them and categorize them, it's just a way of controlling them over time.
Would it be true to say, Philip, that people tend to spend more than they think?
That's absolutely true. That's almost a golden rule, Stephen.
Yeah.
That people will think they spend maybe 10,000 a year, and in fact they spend maybe 12,000. Now that doesn't sound like an awful lot,
yes,
but it's the difference for most people between a fairly controlled budget and a completely uncontrolled budget, and the impact that has on their lives.
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, Philip, I had the impression that the overspend, the general overspend, is pretty common and pretty sizable enough, and that has landed people in both consumer debt and long-term debt, you know, that they hadn't really anticipated. Is that correct?
That is correct. I think in Ireland, the typical overspend is about 20-25%.
Wow.
So again, using those numbers, if somebody has an income of 20,000, they're likely to be spending maybe 4,000 or 5,000 more than they're taking in.
Mm.
And, you know, over time, that gives them two problems, because it builds up a debt on one hand that they're trying to manage. And then on the other hand, they have the ongoing problem of controlling the spending year by year. Yeah. They have to allocate their money properly.
Mm.
And my advice to people always is use a considerable amount of your income to service your debt first, and after that, deal with your day-to-day expenses. So in my experience, the key to a good budget is to control your day-to-day expenditure. So identify how much you spend on food, identify how much you spend on heat. Some of those you don't have huge scope, but it's important that you know how much, and particularly that you know how much you're overspending.
Take a typical scenario of a family living on the average income about 35,000 euros a year, and maybe that family probably is not paying an awful lot of tax. They're paying the social welfare, so they might have 2,500 euros a month. And let's say they're falling behind, they're running somewhat into deficit. How can a budget help them?
Well, I think the first thing they have to do, Stephen, is they have to acknowledge that they are running into difficulties.
Yeah.
Some people just spend and spend, and it's kind of a bit of an Irish attitude, hope that something will happen in the near future to get them out of this difficulty.
Yeah.
And that rarely happens.
Mm.
So what people find themselves dealing with then about 3 or 4 years down the line is a fairly substantial debt, maybe bank overdraft or credit card debt, and the fact that they're also overspending on a day-to-day basis. I think the best piece of advice that you can give an individual or a family in that situation is prioritise things that they need to address. So the first thing you always deal with is credit card debt. After that, you try and come to an arrangement maybe with your bank to reduce payments on mortgages or some similar arrangement. And then you try to deal with your day-to-day expenditure. So you just look at different budgets. But the importance of a budget is that it requires you to make a plan and gives you something to commit to.
Mm.
And it actually requires you to put it down on paper.
And that may be one of the hardest parts, just taking the time to write it all down. But maybe you're reluctant or intimidated to set up a personal budget. If one thing should be clear to all of us, it's that ignorance is not bliss. For copies of this audio series and many others, free to listen to or download for later, we hope you'll head over to family.ie. You'll also find many helpful links and resources for every member of your family. If you can't find what you're looking for, contact us. We're honoured to help in any way we can. Again, that's family.ie. All of the features and programmes you've heard about today simply would not be possible without the generosity of our supporters. So a big thanks to you for helping us as we help strengthen individuals and families throughout Ireland. We'd love to hear from you, by the way. Our text comment line is 086-251-6886, or email us radio@family.ie. That's 086-251-6886 or radio@family.ie. So until next time, on behalf of Stephen Carty and our entire team, I'm Ronan Johnston. Slán go fóill. Thank you for listening to family.ie.